Welcome back to another episode of A Desi Woman Podcast. I am your host, Sonia Gokhale, and the voices I am seeking may have never been heard before, but their stories deserve to be told. What is a Desi woman? She is a dynamic, fearless, and strong woman. She is your mother, your grandmother, your daughter, your sister. She is every one of us who is on an endless pursuit of self-empowerment and fulfillment. I am Sonia Gokhale, and I am a Desi woman.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of A Desi Woman Podcast. I'm your host, Sonia Gokhale. In launching this podcast series, it was important for me to bring forth female voices from India and its diaspora that we don't often hear in mainstream media outlets. From a political perspective, I was quite certain there was GOP support in our Indian communities, and I wanted those voices to be heard so that in a time of unprecedented political divisiveness in the U.S., at the very least, our community, our network of Indian Americans and Indian American women could serve as an example of a community that is willing to hear contrasting viewpoints and perspectives in the hope of creating bipartisan collaboration and to celebrate the fact that we can and should have a shared vision for this country. So today we are joined by three Indian American women who identify as proud Americans, proud Indians, proud Hindus, and proud Republicans. Tonight, I am so excited to welcome Vandana Mangalik. Vandana grew up in Banaras, India, and received her bachelor's degree in life science and master's in botany and environmental science from Banaras Hindu University. She then went on to pursue a PhD in environmental science at the University of Minnesota. Vandana is a business owner and manages an elder care center in Minneapolis. Community service is exceedingly important to her, and she volunteers at her local Hindu temple, including teaching Hinduism to high school students, and also sponsoring a Braille library in a girls' school in Banaras, India. I'm also joined by Dr. Srilekha Pallay. Dr. Pallay earned her doctorate in physical therapy from Boston University and her MBA with a focus on healthcare administration from the IBM Institute of Business Management. Currently, she is in a healthcare leadership role and an entrepreneur. Dr. Pallay is also the current political director for the American Hindu Coalition and vice chair of campaigns and elections for the Fairfax, Virginia Republicans Committee. I'm also joined by Vasavi Chaka. Vasavi is currently running for the Naperville City Council in Illinois, which is a nonpartisan election for the city of Naperville. Vasavi and her family have lived in Naperville, Illinois since 2004. She has spent the past 21 years as an IT executive working for Fortune 500 companies such as IBM and Siemens. Though her campaign schedule keeps her busy, she is very committed to community service, and giving back is one of her core beliefs. She devotes numerous hours to volunteer working with STEM programs in area high schools. I'd like to welcome all of you to the podcast. So my first question for the group is, each and every one of you immigrated to this country from India. And what's quite compelling, I think, for me and our listeners is the fact that all three of you have developed a deep interest in American politics, policymaking, and current issues at the local, state, and federal level. One of you, Vasavi, is currently running for a local city council position in Illinois. And Srilekha, you have run previously in Fairfax County, Virginia. So my question is, what was it that made each of you interested in finding your political voice and having it heard, whether in the area of advocacy, fundraising, policymaking, or even agreeing to come here on a Desi Woman podcast? It truly takes a very special person to make the bold jump from private citizen to being a political candidate, active political volunteer, or supporter of a major political party. And a second part to that question, a very important one, what drew you to the Republican Party and its ideology? I'll start with you, Srilekha.
Sonia, thank you so much first for bringing us together. It's quite admirable that you're trying to bring Republican ladies together doesn't happen very often. So I have to thank you for doing that. So as for me, as a child coming from a family where I've seen my own dad, my uncle, and my cousin brother being in politics at certain level, it was very natural for me to be inclined for politics, or at least to say the least about policymaking. After coming to United States, after I got married at 22 and coming to United States, and after making the initial economic adjustment, I looked around to see how do I implant my national cultural values into the American lifestyle. And religion obviously took on more prominence, and that's how I became a temple president, which was one of the largest North Indian temple in the area. And that experience of being temple president and taking on that largest leadership role enriched my value, cultural belief, and understanding of even American society. And it just gave me that gratifications that America's freedom of worship means that individual is free to worship any God at any time, at any place in this beautiful country and free land. So while I was kind of enjoying that freedom in the country, I was naturally inclined as a healthcare professional to kind of move on to policy world as well. Like any other immigrant, while I was living my dream in this land of liberty of policy making and being in leadership role, I attended Obama rally. Again, being an immigrant, it was natural for me to be a Democrat. While I attended Obama rally, believe it or not, I was quite taken back at the inflammatory speech Obama gave. And then I came back from that Obama rally and just really wanted to look into other party side. And that's where Republican Party came into picture. Long story short, I just knocked on Republican Party door and said, you know what, I want to really explore what this party values are, because I'm really not enjoying the inflammatory speech and highly partisan divide that Obama is spreading around. And that's how I exposed myself to Republican Party, and I'm enjoying the Republican Party values of freedom, limited government, and strong national defense family values. So here I am with traditional Republican values gleaned from these resources and rich history.
Wonderful. Thank you for answering that. And Vasavi, the same question for you.
Thank you, Sonia. Thank you for giving us an opportunity to voice our concerns and beliefs on this very neutral platform. My political involvement actually came from my very early childhood. I come from a very active public service and community engaged family. And my grandfather was a freedom fighter when India was struggling for freedom from British government. My grandfather worked with Gandhi. So I grew up listening to those stories and always inspired by values of freedom and self-service about self and value-based leadership and all that stuff. So I was very active in India in a political arena. I used to be participating in student elections, and I was also a very active student leader when I was in high school and also in college. Then I got married, and because of my marriage, I had to leave India and follow my husband. It was a great thing, and it was an adventure. That put a stop to my political activities, because my husband is a scientist and he's not into politics or activism, this type of stuff. So I concentrated on my education and also raising my family, having kids and all that stuff. Once I have my kids, I, you know, concentrated on my career and raising kids and settling down, living my American dream. So then not until we came to Naperville, Illinois, I got involved in civic engagement. My kids were in schools. My daughter was in high school and my son was in elementary school. At that time, I have seen some of the things which disturbed me in the school education system here in Naperville. It's not the education was bad, but some of the programs were not promoted in the schools where my son was attending. And the other school district was offering all those programs. And I thought, why these kids have the disadvantage of not having these programs? So we went to school and talked to the headmaster and teachers, and they said, we do not have resources, we cannot do these things. And that kind of made me jump into the public arena. So I did not even know what school board was and what the political system is here. So with that impulse, I just ran for school board, and I didn't really know anything about it. And I learned a lot and made a lot of relationships and friendships, and learned about people and again, the political affiliation, Republican Party and Democratic Party and their values. Until then, like I think Srileka mentioned in her previous podcast, she didn't even know she was Republican until she attended this rally. So that is what it made me realize when I was hearing from both sides. One fine day, I said, like, darn, I'm a Republican. I'm not a Democrat, because a lot of people like us from who come from India, largest democracy on the planet Earth, they think we are coming from a biggest democracy, and that's why we are Democrats. I mean, that's what I heard a lot of times. I may be wrong, but that is the assumption a lot of Indians have when they come here, and naturally they are drawn to Democratic Party. Then I started attending the monthly meetings, and I made so many good friends who are, you know, I haven't really experienced any white supremacy or racism or any of the things. And I was only the Indo-American person there, and they never made me feel like I'm a different person. Eventually, I got very interested in joining the politics, and I was the first Indo-American who was the president of Naperville Area Republican Women Organization. Then after I served there for 2 years and I moved to the state level, again, I was the first Indo-American who served at the Illinois State of Federation of Republican Women Organization at the leadership level. So now I just moved on to a different journey based on policy education. But, you know, those are the things which inspired me to be in the Republican Party. The reason I'm running is a totally different story. Lately, we have seen so much division in the country, not only at the national level, but the very healthy and tight, close communities like Naperville. We are experiencing a lot of this division, and people are not comfortable with each other to have an open dialogue. And for me, it's a community engagement with the transparency is very important, because that is vital for the strong communities. So when these things are happening, you cannot just sit back and watch somebody is going to come and rescue, or somebody is going to come and mend this problem. These are the times for, you know, call for action. So I'm a very good connector of the people, and the real leader need to be a building bridges between people and communities with different beliefs and faiths and, you know, all that. So I believe in that. That's the reason I'm running for city council, to do the community engagement and not promoting the connections, not the conflicts. Thank you, Sonia.
Wonderful. Thank you. And Vandana, the same question for you.
Thank you, Sonia. Let me take this opportunity to felicitate all you wonderful three ladies doing great public service and community service. Like my fellow Indian Americans from India, I also came to this country a while ago, about 29 years ago. And growing up, I was also interested in current affairs and politics, and it was part of a very multicultural, multi-religious, pluralistic society in a city called Banaras on the banks of the River Ganges in India. And it was a very healthy, organic living. And when I came to Minnesota, it kind of was very similar. It's a very open society. I did have a few bad incidents, racial incidents, and I think almost all of us have had those. And full disclosure, I am a little bit, I identify myself now as an independent, but right-leaning, figuratively and literally, a little more right-leaning, because I was with Obama and Hillary Clinton, and that Democratic Party made sense to me. But what I see now is not the Democratic Party that I believed in. And I'll tell you why. I am feeling very misrepresented and taken for granted, feeling very disillusioned and disenfranchised by this Democratic Party as of now. And that is my reason why I have jumped ship. Lately, you must have heard there were these series of resolutions coming against India, but they really are against Hindu Americans all over different cities. They are called resolutions against CAA, which, by the way, is a sitting law in India, and it respects and protects people who were written into the Constitution of India in 1950s when the country had got a constitution as a republic. Yesterday was Gandhiji's birthday. From the land of Gandhi, from the most nonviolent, like the ancient, the most democratic and the most nonviolent country, where MLK learned all his ideas about nonviolence. And people are saying things like riots are the voice of the unheard because MLK said that. And I want to say a beautiful quote by Rousseau in his book, The Social Contract. And he says, when the government exceeds the boundaries set in place by the people, it is the mission of the people to abolish such government and begin anew. And I feel that sort of resonates with me because I am so tired of the false narratives, the factually incorrect, inaccurate versions of India and Hindu Americans being portrayed in the popular media and the media narratives, constant bashing of people that have never been indulgent in terrorist activities or any anti-national activities around the world or in America. And we are not able to carry our narrative. We are not the people that are being portrayed. I would like all the city councils to rescind these silly, very, very factually incorrect resolutions that they have come up. And this is in the name of democracy. This is in the name of human rights. And so this really got me very, very rebellious. I was very disillusioned by the Democratic Party. And as another major party, I saw some space with the Republicans where I felt that I could provide a different point of view. I could reason. Because the party that I had been voting for has taken me for granted, is not listening to me. I wrote to a local public officials, I wrote to the senators, I wrote to the governor. Everybody said that these resolutions are well within their... Well, you are bringing these resolutions in cities, but you're not taking care of your own racist and human rights problem. I live in a city where 5 days after this resolution passed, a person was cold-bloodedly in full view of the camera was murdered. It was pathetic. I come from a city that is so socially progressive. We gave the first Muslim, the first independent governor, the first Muslim man congressman, the first Muslim woman congressman. We are so out there. We used to pride ourselves as the example to the rest of America. And this is what's happening. And I just feel that we have to hold our public officials very accountable. Whoever the party is, it doesn't matter. I was very, very compelled to speak and shout from every corner that I could that, you know, we really need to stand up and say Hindu Americans are not what we are being shown. Hindu Americans are always with democracy and are pluralistic and respectful of other people. And it is very wrong that you are twisting somebody else's faith for your own political gain, for your own political agendas. There is some kind of a political expediency going on where the major party candidate is scared of even calling herself of Indian origins. Sonia, you proudly say that you come from India. Why isn't the vice president candidate able to say that she's from Indian origin? Not South. I mean, yeah, she's South Asian, but she's also Indian. And I've never heard her say that. Whereas Nikki Haley goes on national camera and says that my parents came from India. I'm a proud person of Indian origin. So there was a lot of disillusion. It was very heartbreaking. And as the other major party, I felt that I was not being heard or seen in this party. And because there is no other party that I could talk to, I feel like now I have to engage with the Republicans. And I feel that we need to get involved as people who've been watching what's going on and make things better for both the parties. But I feel safer and I'm going to be with the Republicans this time. Thank you.
Before I jump into my next question, I really want to offer some broad statistics about Indian Americans as voters in this country for our listening audience. As I researched the show, it was eye-opening for me, and the following data can be found at National Asian American Survey, which I will have in the podcast notes. As of 2020, people born in India are the second largest immigrant group in the United States. In 2015, 58% were citizens. Nearly two-thirds of them were younger than 18. The number of Indian Americans eligible to vote is increasing by about 150,000 annually, a third through naturalization and the rest as children of immigrants reach voting age. For the 2020 elections, here's what this means. Voters of Indian origin will barely be about 1% of eligible voters. Most of these voters do tend to lean Democratic. In the 2016 presidential election, 69% of Asian Americans voted for Hillary Clinton and 25% for Trump. For Indian Americans, the numbers were 77% and 16%, respectively. Since most Indian Americans live in heavily Democratic areas like California and the Northeast, for the most part, they are not swing voters in swing states. So here's a question for each of you. What are you seeing about Indian American voters in your communities? Is there an opportunity for greater community-wide engagement? In preparing for my podcast interviews with Indian American women in the political scene, I was astounded by the fact that most of you, even within the same party, aren't necessarily acquainted with one another. There is no central platform or organization apart from party lines that unites Indian American women. And while I certainly hope this show can help to change that, I want to see what your thoughts are. So let's start with you, Vasavi.
That's a very good question, Sonia. And it's a very powerful analysis you have described here. In Naperville, we have 15% of the population is Asian Americans, and which means a lot of Indo-American families are here. And each school district has 15% of the Indo-American kids who attend the schools, two school districts here. So unfortunately, our Indian community is not very active in the political arena or civic engagement. They are always talking about kids' education and settling down in good careers and, live in a nice neighborhood where is there good schools and less crime and all these kind of things. But when it comes to civic engagement, we don't really see many Indians, whether it is men or women, engaged in the civic conversation or get in the political activism. They do donate money to the candidates, mostly to the Democratic side. And I do have a lot of good friends who are Democrats and who are the senators and congressmen and all in elected positions. But, when it comes to any party, people do not really show much interest in, running for a position, or they don't really support completely the candidate from the Indian origin. They do not understand what each party stands for completely. I mean, we only know the party principles on the surface, not in the deeper level. And that shows a lack of political education in this country for the immigrants who come to this country. So the civic education is very, very important. So before even the civic engagement, we need to make ourselves a main, stream of the mainstream community. We tend to stay to our own crowds and, our culture, and we just stay as a separate group. And we don't really get ourselves engaged in the mainstream community. And I have noticed that a lot. And I attend Rotary meetings, and I go to Chamber of Commerce and other community organizations events in the Naperville. And I'm only the Indian person and another gentleman. We only the two of us in every meeting for past 5 years. And when I see that this is not a, all the Indian, most of the Indians who live in this community, they are in good professions, like, you know, they own their own companies, they're entrepreneurs, business people, doctors, lawyers, and teachers, professors, but they do not really take any part in the civic arena. If you go and ask them to vote for you, they may vote for you. And if you ask for the fund, you know, money for your campaign, they may give you. But they don't have an active voice in this area. So we need to encourage everybody in that. So the another thing which leads to is the schools. The schools are influencing children whom to vote for and whom not to. And the children comes home and then talk to their parents. Like, you know, they are dictating the parents whom to vote and whom not to vote. And if parents do not understand the process and political beliefs or the legislation or, you know, constitution of this country, and how they are going to have a civic dialogue with their children. And first of all, the teachers have a place to tell children whom to vote and whom not to vote in the classroom. The classrooms are not campaign platforms. So that needs to be very mindful, and it needs to bring to the school board members. And they need to address this from the top level. There should be some kind of guidelines. You know, teachers should not be talking about politics in the classrooms. It doesn't matter either way, whether it is left party or right party or the middle party. Classrooms should not be political platforms for children to bring the message to their parents and create a conflict in the family. When an Indian candidate stands for election, the people who are actually voting for her or him, they need to know the basics of the constitution and how the policies are made and how policies shape every day of their life. So either way, whether it is a democratic policy or republican policy, we need to have a deep understanding about the policy. Is it really helping the community and the person at the level where the positive change is going to be in the community to help larger community, or is it just helping, you know, actually harming the community? If you do not have education in policy, it's very difficult for them to choose. And when it comes to based on a Democratic Party or Republican Party, people are heavily charged by their emotions. And emotions are creating a lot of conflict between people, and it is building a large gaps instead of bridges between people. And that is what it is creating a lot of conflict in the community right now. So especially our Asian community, Indo-Americans, need to have civic engagement, and they need to get involved in the community, also get educated in the policies, and also they need to go through constitution and what it stands for, and how the state and federal governments run, and why local government is so important, and it's the backbone of the entire system. And if we can have that dialogue in a civic manner, I think we can create that engagement in this Indian community to be part of the mainstream community.
And Sri Lanka, the same question for you.
Sonia, I think Vasavi spoke very eloquently about the entire cycle, right? We come here as immigrants, and after making the initial economic adjustment, which takes quite a bit of toll on us, we come here with merely hundreds of dollars, and we just have to really build some kind of economic stability to ensure that we are not only safe, but also we are creating this little wealth that where we feel secure. After doing that, that's when we are kind of looking around and saying, okay, what else I can do for the community? That's where the civic engagement begins. So during that process, I agree. I think we kind of take a backseat about community engagement. And like Vasavi was saying, that's where we get into our little shelter of being in our own comfort zone and not feeling like we have to get out of our comfort zone and actually get into the mainstream business. So very few people, such as who you see right now are the people that are actually going out and running for school boards because they do see the gap in the policies, or running for supervisor positions, or running for city councils or senators and congresses because they want to make a difference in policy making. But I also, that being said, I also kind of will move on to some solutions, right? I am starting to see some changes happening within Indian community, though. Indian communities are becoming empowered. Indian communities are starting to realize that same old is not going to be okay. Indian communities are starting to understand geopolitics much better than what it was 10 years back. If it was 10 years back or two decades back, yes, we were one of those people that would just donate money. We would be very submissive. We would just be one of those constituents that would feel like we would just donate money and we would just follow through whatever the leaders ask us to follow through. But things are changing, especially our second generation immigrants. Granted, they're all much more inclined to the Democratic Party, but regardless of the party they belong to, they're getting to be a lot more vocal, so which is a positive trend. So going back to what Vasavi was saying, that teachers have no business in educating them politically, I agree. I think schools should be very educational from the perspective of sticking to the curriculum and shouldn't be kind of dictating what side the kids' political party system should look like. That kind of being said, the parents should have such knowledge about constitution that no matter what kids are saying, they should be able to engage in active dialogue to ensure that they're able to participate in an active dialogue so they're not being swung by what kids are saying. I also will move on to your second point of your question. I believe you said, what is the central platform? Is there even a central platform such as yours? No, that at this point, there is no platform for neither Indian women. For that matter, there is no platform for immigrant women. I feel like there is a little more openness for Democratic women and less openness for Republican immigrant women at this point, but that is changing for sure. Unfortunately, there are not multiple organizations that are promoting women's political participation and gender equality still. It will be great to have organizations that have commitments on gender equality and enhancing women's political participation through policy dialogue and exchange of good practices among government and civil society. It'll be great to have those organizations that facilitate that exchange of experience and expertise so women also can get better at political and public life and build national mechanisms for advancement of women. So community organization, again, community-wide engagement is currently done through several women groups and local GOP groups. And I know myself and Vandana have a couple of conversations saying that how do we get better involved in local GOP groups so we can better promote our women's political participation. But I do see even in this local GOP groups that there are not many immigrants, especially South Asian immigrants, lack of participation. Vasavi says she participates in Chamber of Commerce, but you don't see a lot of immigrants, women or South Asian women participating in those things. So I encourage my own colleagues, South Asian women or women or immigrant women, participating in those kind of channels too. I was actually planning on building a coalition just for immigrant women, calling it as Immigrant Republican Federation Women. That way, immigrant women feel secure and safe. In that channel, I had a vision of developing high school clubs or middle school clubs or college clubs, just focusing on conservative girls' clubs, developing them into leadership forums to focus on immigrant girls having that conservative values and telling immigrant girls that it is okay to have conservative values. Just because you are a high school girl or a college girl, you need not always fall into liberal category. I think there are many mechanisms to develop. There are already a lot of mechanisms developing in Republican world. There should be more mechanisms. I think that is the wholesome approach in order for us to kind of expand and increase our community-wide engagement. Definitely, to answer your question, there are more opportunities for greater community-wide engagement. There are many ideas floating out there, and we would love to create that central platform, and you'll see more coming from our side.
Vandana, same question for you.
I was so taken in by the beautiful way that the two ladies were describing on why. I think I would challenge your experience about this understanding. I think Indian Americans have been very involved always. They've just never worn their, when we say Indian Americans, I'm talking of people of mostly Hindu faith and Sikh faith or mostly Hindu faith, that they do not wear their religion on their sleeve. When we come here, we quietly get down to work and we become, you know, different heads of deans of universities, CEOs of Fortune 500 companies, businessmen, hotel owners, you know, everywhere you see, we're a little bit like, you know, the proverbial, you know, proverbial doers. And it has been sort of our calling that we just quietly vote or do whatever. And I was struck by what the women were saying, that we have always followed where the high income jobs are and things, but we've never paid attention to the fact that why we're in this society that rewards our hard work is because the policies and the politics of this society and country create the reasons that everybody wants to immigrate. Everybody from the world wants to immigrate to America. And I think it's striking a chord in most of us now. And we realize that we have to be, while we were silently engaged, we have to get our hands and feet dirty and get down to grassroots level. I was just reading about the number of Muslim American women that are mayors in this country and city councilors and are actively working towards creating a positive narrative towards their religion. Their religion has taken such a bashing. But this is the country where after 9/11, it gives space near ground zero, like 500 yards away from ground zero after 9/11, they have given space for the largest mosque being built in America. So I think we Indian Americans have always felt very grateful for the society and the country that we live in. And we've lived quietly. We never make a sound and bite about the fact that in 2006, when we were making the temple in my city in Minneapolis, and there was some amount of hate crime and some teenager boys, I think most of them were Caucasian, completely dismantled the temple deities and broke them and were charged and were caught. And this, the community decided that we didn't want them to get a bad rap on their future. So we let them, we asked the judge to just let them come and help us rebuild. And these kids, these teenagers were required to come and do community work with us at in the temple. We brought new deities. We started all afresh. And we showed this to our kids then. And there was a lot of positive impact in the local community in Maple Grove, where the temple is, that people really felt very good about the fact. But it did not pick up in the national media. You know, hate picks up national media, but the positive stuff about Indian Americans does not. And this is why I am so impassioned against these city council resolutions against India and against a resolution against of the most coarse and crude kind, which is, you know, asking people to not give space to other religions, to give space to people who are persecuted the world over. I mean, the irony is you call yourself the Statue of Liberty, the place of liberty where anybody who feels persecuted can come. And you are not letting other countries do that at the same time. So I keep coming back to the same thing, that we have been very engaged. We may not be very important in our grassroots politics. I think that's changing. I think a lot of women, I think I heard you in your last podcast, there was a lady who was a mayor in a small city. I was very impressed by her and her story. I think all of us have personal stories, and we've always sort of been very engaged everywhere, just never took the political monikers and never took the formal positions of power. And now in hindsight, of course, we should have worked a little more harder. But I think it's been corrected. I think ladies like Vasavi and Shirlekha and yourself and others are getting engaged in mainstream politics. And I think I also felicitate women on the Democratic side who are trying to work towards a narrative. I think after 77% people who voted, Hindu Americans or Indian Americans who voted for the Democratic Party last time, are going to break off. People like me, I think you will see a large chunk of Indian Americans will be voting for Republicans, because we do understand that the Democratic Party needs to take us seriously and we need to make a voice for ourselves in the Republican Party. And the Republican Party is paying us more attention. So why not take, inviting arms rather than arms that are pushing us away? And so I feel very hopeful. I feel very positive. I feel that, Indian women and Hindu women can do wonders because of the culture that we come from, because our religion is very democratic. We never have a single ideology. We have openness for everyone. All sorts of ideologies are part of our, if you can call it a religion, Hinduism. And I think that as women have shown that they have gone on, you know, Fortune 500 companies and been the best physicians and been the best educators and been the best professors. But I think we'll make the best politicians too. I see Nikki Haley coming onto the ticket 4 years from now, and I see a Hindu American woman, or at least an Indian American woman, becoming the first woman president of this country. So very hopeful about it.
So in the engagement side, we created an organization called Indo-American Community Outreach. It is actually commissioned by the city council itself. Our previous mayor and the current mayor, they both endorsed for the Indian Community Outreach in Naperville. And it grown into a very prestigious organization. And the main focus of the organization is to engage, educate, and empower Indian communities to bring them all together. As you know, our Indian communities, we have, there are 10 or 15 people together, they will create an organization. So this Indo-American Community Organization is a umbrella type of organization, and it just helps the community to address the social issues. You know, we have candidate forums and scholarships for the students, and India Day is our signature event. Last year we had almost 40,000 people attended the event in Naperville. Is a very small community, but we had and it created a very positive narrative about the Indian community and what it is about. And we also the Americans come and celebrate Holi also in this community, and they enjoy the colors, they enjoy the culture, and enjoy the food. So when we bring these type of things together and make us part of the community, and then invite others also into our community, I think it is in our DNA. All the Indians know that, and we are known for our hospitality. So ICO is one of our biggest achievement in our community. And as Vandana mentioned, this what they have done with the kids who violated the temple and you know, vandalism type of thing, what they have done with the kids, it's amazing. I mean, you know, when a person does wrong, it's not punish them, but reforming them is the solution. And these stories don't make it to CNN and other liberal channels. But we need to make this go, Vandana, like you shared that story right now. And we need to share that story again and again. You know, these small things, ripple effects will, you know, influence a lot more people. And we can just share stories like this. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I agree. I think there has to be a campaign from Indian American women. And Shrilekha and I are part of an organization called Indian American Republican Women. And we want to create kind of a club where we can come up with a narrative and create the narrative that is the truth and not the narrative that is being given in the popular media. And I agree with all you ladies that we have to be so active. Today is the day that we just have to be very active about what is going on around us.
So I have a very different perspective on this, Sonia. I feel like Trump has not done anything different than what was written about immigration in the Constitution. What Trump has actually done is actually implemented what was in the Constitution. This might be something that I would wait to see what other ladies have to say, because I wouldn't claim to say that I'm a foundation constitutionalist and I know every word of it. But from what I understand, I do have a lot of friends in legal industry, and from what I've understood from them is that he's not done anything that it was just that during Obama administration and during previous administration, it was never implemented, and Trump chose to implement every word of it. If you think about it, all he's saying is that you can't overstay. I'm all for legal immigration. If American folks don't have the jobs, then you can't overstay your visas. I am not going to let Americans suffer just because some Indian companies are trying to choose low labor. So I think anything that his policies have said have been very focused on America first. And which, if you think about it in a bigger picture, you really want a president that wants to take care of his own country and his countrymen. So I would love to hear from other ladies. This is a topic that I think I want to think from both the perspective of being a very empathetic, as a human being, but also be a very partial human being coming from an Indian immigrant background, but also try to be very focused on merit immigration, but also be a, as a Republican, I want to be very focused on being a constitutionalist. And I favor Trump policies to an extent that I'm in full favor of merit immigration. There was a time where he let all the doctors come in because that's what America needed. Then he let IT engineers come in because that's what America needed. There was a time where the United States government, like when I came in, there was a need for physical therapists. That's my background. And I was able to get my green card in a very short amount of time. So at any point of time, U.S. government chose to bring in employees that country needed. And that's what Trump did it too. So it feels like when Trump tries to implement something that is good for America, then it becomes a problem. But when other presidents try to implement the same thing, it was never a problem. So this becomes more of a Trump issue versus more of a not a Trump issue. So I would love for other ladies to take a dig on this topic, but I really don't see anything wrong with his policies. I think America first policies are great. Merit-based immigration policies are great. Legal immigration is the way to go. And I don't see any issues with that policies at all.
Mostly, I agree with Srileka, what she has said about Trump and his immigration policy. And I also talked to many of my friends and my nephew, who came here as a student, and now he got a very good job, and he lives in Minneapolis. And I have another, my best friend's son, he lives in New York, and he also came here as a student, and he got his H-1. And then he's also working in a very good organization. So they are not really affected by this. But I do agree with Srileka, what she has said. You know, a lot of kids come here to study, and there are a lot of people who go to university here, and then they should be, based on merit, they should be given the first preference. I mean, if you have your child in that position, and how you take the situation. And I strongly believe in merit-based immigration, and also legal immigration. When we came to this country, we came legally and then waited for our turn to get green card and then become citizens. So if we waited that long, and why these new, you know, different people have different preferences, and these policies are so important, and the abuse of the system needs to stop. So I'm not, you know, these immigration policies for, you know, border security and legal immigration and merit-based immigration, as a citizen of this country, you need to, you know, support those things. And personally, maybe some of the IT companies my friends have may have created issues having the staff and all that. But there are no, I don't think anything unfair has done to the people because of these policies. And again, you know, as Srileka said, a leader should take care of the country first and then other things.
I'm going to read you a quote that I really like reading at times when I feel very down and out. And this is written on the pedestal of the Statue of Liberty. And these are Emma Lazarus' words, which says, "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, the tempest tossed, to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door." And I'm reminded of my friend whose family immigrated from, I think, Denmark or Sweden. I don't remember because Minnesota has been a very Norwegian, very Scandinavian part of the country. And she used to tell me that when her forefathers, 2-3 generations ago, came, they were given a space near Wisconsin and they just said, run as far as you can and put a stake in and all that land is yours. And obviously, you know, they have what, hundreds of acres, and they live there. There's a lot of oak trees. They make some oak wood and make a decent amount of money out of this free land. So when we talk today about immigration, these words don't apply. The policies have changed. There is such a large amount of complexity to this. I often say that, you know, politics is about perceptions and it is about optics. And this sudden decision by President Trump seems to be catered towards the rising unemployment in the country. I had a personal experience where when I was a homemaker raising my children, and there was another gentleman who was also a home husband, and I invited him and his daughter over to lunch to be with my daughter and me. And he just was so angry with the Indians because he could see that, he says, you guys have no educational debt. You come with these very, very easy government subsidized educations. You come, you right away get great jobs. And we feel left out because we have such a lot of educational debt that we have to pay. And you take the plummiest jobs. And of course, he forgets to remember that we are very hardworking, very low-cost fruits on the tree, easy to pick whenever they want. We will work endless hours. We don't ask much. We don't ask for Christmas holidays. We're just the best people to work. And sometimes politicians do what they do because they need the optics of it. I don't say that I understand everything that is being done in politics, but I do worry about the Dreamers and the DACA and the border security and the way the kids were treated. I think there is a lot of room for some kind of a bipartisan, kind of a open engagement conversation where I don't agree with the anti-immigrant sentiment, but I hope that it improves with some kind of a dialogue where people can be both sensible and conservative and also be humanistic. And this is not just about Trump. It's trying to centralize also the right-wing conservatism and to engage in some kind of a bipartisan policy work, because divisions and misunderstandings and frustrations have what has created these riots around us. People are angry, but people don't know how to express themselves. People are not able to converse with each other from both sides of the aisle. It is a very important topic. It's a very complex topic. And I think there has to be very clear and very good dialogue. And we have to have a country which is open to religious, political refugees coming as reasons of, you know, religious or other kinds of oppression. We have to have a country which is open to educational and other kinds of immigrants. But we also need to have a country that is engaged with other countries and creates good economies and good political systems in these countries and not be hypocritical. So the intelligentsia of different countries, like India's brain drain, doesn't happen. We can all engage in some kind of a civic and civil interaction at the international level. The fact that so many people just keep running on, you know, on foot, and others from El Salvador and lower South American, I mean, the abject poverty and the poverty in America. I mean, there's just so much to work about. We can't just be worrying about, you know, I mean, it's important as an Indian. I sound very crass when I say I can't always worry about the Indians. But I think that's why I feel like there has to be an overhauling of everything, just the way things are thought, the way policies are thought, the way law is thought, and think about what is rationale for the country at this moment. Thank you.
I really, really enjoy Ronald Reagan. The people that have spoken to me, I always know that I really enjoy his quote. I'll quote one of the things that he said, how true it is even till today. He quoted in one of his speeches that one legislator accused him of having a 19th century attitude on law and order. And he said that that is a totally false charge. I have an 18th century attitude. That is when the founding fathers made it clear that the safety of law-abiding citizens should be one of the government's primary concerns. And so he meant to basically say that is 19th century attitude. That was an 18th century attitude. And I meant to say that is a 20th century attitude, and that should be a 30th century attitude, right? Law and order is should never be an old-fashioned statement. Right now, in fact, even 2 days back or 3 days back, I was at Fairfax County Board of Supervisors meeting where I did my 3-minute spill of why law enforcement officers needs to be protected and need to be complimented for their services and how much minorities will struggle if law and order is not protected in the country. That being said, I think Republican Party, the choice is very clear. Republican Party is one party that supports law and order. It supports the police. It supports the Second Amendment rights. It wants it is very focused on securing borders. So the choice is extremely clear. I think coming from a background of immigrant background, I feel like law and order is my number one choice. I think it's good for immigrants. It's good for children. It's good to live in neighborhoods where there is crime free. So I can't see an issue of not having, I just can't see a drawback of having issues with not having proper law and order, right? So I support the party that supports law and order. In fact, when the debate happened, I was pretty surprised that Joe Biden was not willing to condemn violence. And in fact, he called Antifa as a phenomenon, which kind of literally took me by surprise. It is not a phenomenon. It is happening. It is an organization. Black Lives Matter, I respect Black Lives Matter. I respect All Lives Matter. But Black Lives Matter is an organization that is supported by individuals that really don't care for the country. Peaceful protests are okay, but violence is not okay. And violence is real. Businesses are hurting. The houses are burning, billions of dollars are being wasted, and this is not the America that I walked into. So I think as for me, I support law and order professionals and law and order 100%, and that's precisely why I like the party that supports that law and order 100% of the time.
Yeah, this is actually something that I'm very passionate about. And I was listening very carefully to Shrilekha. And I can tell you that while I was very angry with the St. Paul City Council for bringing out this resolution against India and effectively against the Hindu Americans, I was extremely abhorrently jarred by the horrifying episode 5 days later of Mr. George Floyd on the streets of our city. And I've lived here for 29 years. I've seen several shootings. We were all out when Philando Castile happened. And then last midterm, we elected a plethora of Democrats. We gave Ilhan Omar, we gave Keith Ellison as the Attorney General. The police chief of the city is a Black Democrat. The St. Paul City mayor is a Black gentleman, also a Democrat. The city Minneapolis mayor is, I think he's Caucasian, but he's a very well-entrenched Democrat. We have Democrats, both Democrats are women senators. The governor is Democrat. We have Democrats left, right, and center. And I think the reason, I went in protest march. I went with my kids in these protest marches. A lot of these marches were all peaceful. There was a lot of peaceful protest, but there, of course, was a lot of violence. And I feel that the violence that emanated is more an expression of disgust and contempt for the Democratic leadership. And that's why you see it happening more in the Democratic states and cities. Yes, there are elements of, antisocial criminal type people. That is always there. That always has been. But the fact that people are so angry, that fact that people are just so frustrated, that, you know, they are, this violence is more a symptomatic expression of the psychological anger and pain that people are going through. Because last time I saw something like this happening in broad daylight in full public view was Daniel Pearl getting garroted in Pakistan. And that was about 25 years. And I still remember being shaken by seeing that video on YouTube. It was so ugly. And this is not, we are the beacon of this world. We are seen by the whole world. 8 billion people watch us. 8 billion minus 330 million people watch us on a daily basis. And we have to show by example. And the fact that this kind of violence that happened shows that, yes, there is space for some amount of violence, but it has to be contained. It has to be talked to. It has to be taken into account, and the important job of both the Democratic leadership and the Republican leadership to be very pluralistic, very democratic. I come from a religion that is extremely democratic. We believe in reason and multicultural understanding and understanding why people are angry. People are angry because they have elected officials who are supposed to make policy and make it less racist, less difficult. You know, I come from the country where everybody is required to go through some meditation or yoga or something, you know. Why? And I also feel very sympathetic towards the police, because I was just thinking the other day that who would like to get up in the morning, get dressed and go beat up people or shoot people? I mean, that is a very ugly job to do. And we have to take in account these people who are ex-military people, veterans, people who have been hardened war veterans. I mean, there's just so much complexity to life. This is not how people should behave. There has to be more understanding on why this is happening. We're just constantly carping at each other. We're constantly pointing fingers. And I think this time the Democrats have been caught with their pants down. I think they really need to sit down on their desk and think about what their ideology stands for. What exactly are they trying to say? And I think people are very angry at the Democrats. And that's why all this violence and all this really wild way of behavior, which is apparent to the whole world, is going on. Because people don't have a way. People are trying to create new orders. I feel very disenfranchised by the Democratic Party in Minnesota, because we thought that the Democrats were supposed to be the progressives. And it seems that that is not a copyright of the Democrats. You know, progressives can be Republicans too. And I was reading about a movement, it's called C Cubed in St. Cloud, where a university professor has come up and has started, you know, this popular, I mean, I just heard it yesterday on the television, the Schadenfreude, this talking about Somalians as people, or, you know, not letting Somalis. I mean, this is so antithetical and so ugly to the Minnesota way of thinking. We all need to hold each other accountable. Immigration is real. There are people from diverse backgrounds from the world. We just need to sit down and talk and make policy changes that will create a new kind of government. And both sides of the government are using it for politics. But I think that, yes, we have to stop. I really like the way Keisha Lance Bottoms of Atlanta, the mayor, the Black woman mayor of Atlanta, said that, you know, we heard you, stop, please stop, and we will sit down and recreate the policies. And that is why I feel very impassioned and very energized to be part of it, because I still shiver with the voice of George Floyd, a grown man of 6 feet 4 inches calling for his mother while everybody is watching and nobody's able to do anything about it. People are watching in broad daylight, and this is happening in America, in my city. I'm sorry, I get very, very angry and very impassioned by this, but really, this is the reason that everything needs to be rewritten. And I think that protest is important. Most of it was not all violent, but yes, there is very ugly spots of violence. So many, I think about 20 people died needlessly in these violent riots. And really, we need to hold our politicians, our policymakers accountable. We really need to sit down as a community, as a country, to sit and talk nicely, talk with manners, not just the horrible things that we saw in the presidential debate. It was very, very unfettering. It was very disingenuous for them to talk like this. This is not what we expect, you know. White men, white women, brown men, brown women, we all need to sit and talk properly and sit down and create a new system. Thank you.
Okay. America is known as a melting pot with diversity of people, and you know, it adds color to the fabric of this nation. And that is the picture I get when I see America. That's what I see, because that's the culture I come from. And even though I born in Hindu family and I'm a Hindu by living, and you know, my lifestyle, we were taught at my family, like, you know, every religion is equal, and we need to respect faith of others. And you know, you follow your own faith and you respect others. That's how we grew up. And you were asking me, Sonia, how this British government, when my grandfather's time, affected our family life. You know, those days they used to tax on the new clothing. If you are carrying new clothing in your suitcase when you are traveling, you have to pay tax to that. So always, that's how they came to a habit of washing new clothes before wearing them. So my grandmother used to tell me these stories. And they used to have a very lavish life before my grandfather, you know, given up all the luxury life. He was an international businessman and wearing three-piece suits and all that. He given up everything and started wearing khadi. So freedom doesn't come for free. It has a cost to it. And your actions have consequences. When this country talks about, you know, freedom of speech and freedom, and are your actions creating these, you know, are you going to take the responsibility for the consequences you are creating? And that goes back to the value-based education. We are not teaching our kids how to embrace the differences. And that needs to be come from families, also from schools. And if you are teaching liberalism in schools, and you are making more and more, if you are talking about progressive government, that needs to benefit the community, benefit the society, benefit the humankind. But it is not benefiting anybody. I mean, the more progressive politics are taking effect, it is taking a toll on the general public. The law and order should be the very important part of the society. I mean, not to abuse, but to keep checks and balances in place. I am very, very sorry to see, I mean, you know, my heart was broken when I saw this Floyd. He was just, you know, struggling to take a breath, and he was saying, like, I can't breathe, I can't breathe. It's like, you know, you freeze for a minute, like, you know, you don't know what is happening. Is it a movie or is it just really happening? It's the same thing as when Twin Towers came down. A lot of people thought it was a movie. It is not real. It's just like that. I mean, these are the things which we need to have a neutral platform where people can put their you know, emotions aside and discuss. You know, it is very, very sad what is happening to these Black Americans. But at the same time, you know, a lot of police officers are also getting shot and killed. And there are so many young police officers were killed, and the children lost fathers, just like these Black American people lost their lives. And the policies need to be looked at. And before policies, we need to have a different sort of mindset. You know, the values need to be, you know, every person's life has a value. Everybody, you know, everybody have a right to live safely. So it needs, the society have to have a seed planted, like, you know, we are all equal, we are all united, we are all, you know, we are different, but we are the same when it comes to humankind. That is the culture we need to cultivate. And if we can cultivate that kind of culture and then understand the policies and regulations, all these things can only play certain role. But it's the way of thinking and how biased we think. And those are the things need to be changed, and it needs to be, these values need to be inculcated in children when they were still very young. When I teach at the Chinmaya Mission, these are the values we teach: kindness and acceptance, tolerance, and these kind of things. And these children are the future of tomorrow. And when the kids grow up with this value-based leadership, the country will also change. These values doesn't have religion. These values doesn't have color. These values doesn't discriminate. These are the core values which are actually, if you read the Constitution, Constitution is built on the human rights, natural human rights. And when the progressive politics take in place, they don't want anything. Few people want to control the entire country, and they want to put more and more regulations and more controls in place, and they want to control the common person's life, from what to eat and where to sleep and how to live your life. And that is not the life you want. I mean, this is a free country, and how many people sacrificed this country to be this great? And if you do not have law and order, you cannot just blame the entire law and order force. Because there are these incidents taking place, there are a lot of good people, both sides. And you cannot blame the poverty, or you cannot blame law and order for the sad incidents. And the political purposes are the ones which are creating these problems. And they need to, as Vandana said, they need to really sit and talk about these real issues. And also, we need to start a dialogue within our communities and with our families. When we sit at the table, we need to, talk to the kids and listen to them and interject when, with our experiences, what we have seen, and ask them to think differently. Maybe ask them to see the situation in different perspective. And we are not doing those things enough. I mean, we may be doing it, but not enough. And when I talk to my daughter about CAA and what was happening in Kashmir, they do not know what Kashmir people went through. And they only know the Kashmir was shut down for so many days, without any internet access or all this stuff. And they say this is against human rights. But the situation, they do not really understand. And this other one, the CAA thing, these people do not have any right to pass any resolution or anything in the local governments. And it doesn't make any sense. And this is the law in India. And why these people are doing that? Why you are just doing a resolution against the CAA and Article 370 and all these kind of things? You have no right. And there is no transparency. These are people are going back and then back on. They are just going in a secrecy and making all these decisions without public knowledge. That is, those are things we need to protest very strongly. And that's what we are doing. And we have a big thing going on in Chicago as well at this time. And this is one way. It is a good thing for the Indian community to open their eyes to see what this type of law and regulations are creating in this country. I mean, it's nothing to do with the law and order of the country, but I'm just saying this is related to that as well. So we need to have law and order in place. We need to respect the law and order. Without that, this country will be like a big mob. And the reforms are needed from both sides, and the reforms need to be done, like Vandana said about the temple incident. These need to be not to punish the people, but transform the people to see the humanity in their duty. Thank you.
Could I be allowed to add something to what Vasavi just said? Going back to what you said was the British colonialism, British historian, somebody called by the name of Angus Diamond, he did a calculation and he said that India had the highest GDP in the last 15 of the 2000 years. Last 2000 years, India had the highest GDP out of those 1500 of those years. And of those five that it dipped, three of those, it had the second highest GDP in the world. And that's why America was founded, because people went about looking for India and plunder it. And so we know what plundering is. We have been invaded throughout because of the riches. And I think the riches of India was not just its land, but it was also the people and its culture and the predominant religion, which is a very encompassing, democratic, multi-plural, multicultural religion that doesn't force you to believe in one ideology or one thought process or puts another person down because they believe it. So if you don't believe in my way of living, you will not get to heaven, my dear. It's like saying how, you know, I remember reading George Bernard Shaw saying that, you know, patriotism is the belief that my country is superior to your country because I was born in it. And the same thing can be said about many religious ideologies where we think that we are superior to another because I follow this thought process. So I just wanted you to, you know, show some attention that Indians have been persecuted all through the last, you know, millennia. And we understand what goes on in the name of racism and social inequality. We are not the people. We may not be the model minority that is being portrayed, but we also are not the model this minority. We understand the problems that exist. I have a friend who has completely stopped reading any newspapers or televisions because she's just so tired of the toxicity. She says that she falls physically ill because of all the visuals and all the constant barrage of you know, the anger and resentment, negativity. But if you read Steven Pinker, the world and countries in general have done better. The last time this pandemic happened 100 years ago, 50 million people died the world over. This time, we have only, well, one is too many, but we have round about a million people out of the 8 billion who have passed away because of. So this is definitely signs of progress. We, in India, last time in 1918, when the British were ruling it, 6 to 7 million people died in a second, in 2 years. So I think there's definitely room for some positive and uplifting ideology. We are doing fine. I think this is a glitch. I think the way the Republican Party is going, where they are questioning China in its every behavior in economics, in espionage, in trade, in deficits, and the way that it is being a hegemon to the countries of South Asia. I think the government of today is doing the right thing internationally. I think it can maybe do a little better in domestic policy, but I think Trump did a good job. He has proved himself and he gets my vote this time.
That brings us to the end of another edition of a Desi Woman podcast. I would like to thank my guests, Vandana Mangalik, Dr. Srilekha Pale, and Vasavi Chaka. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you so much for giving us this opportunity, Sonia.
Sonia, thank you so much to share our views and beliefs on this show. And hope to be on your show again some other time and with different topics.
Sonia, I sincerely appreciate you giving this opportunity. I do want to say prayers for President Trump. I mean, this is unprecedented that we are in a situation where our beloved President Trump and our floaters, Melania Trump, are COVID positive. So on behalf of the entire country, this is more of a, this is not even a political process. This is our president of the country that as an American, I sincerely pray that they get better and they come out of this tragedy with triumph and they feel well and they continue to further godly leadership over our country. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.